Whew, are you getting a little tired, a little exhausted? I know, but stocks are exciting, folks. There's a lot to learn. So in this presentation, we're going to discuss the different types of stock and the eternal debate over growth versus value. Okay, so let's get started on slide 75 with the different types of common stocks. And this is taken pretty much from Peter Lynch's book, One Up on Wall Street. I've added a few couple things and played with a few things, but he does a very good job of describing the different types of stocks. And this is just the large categories, folks. There are other categories that you could stick stocks in, and they're not neatly put in any one category. Sometimes stocks are in two categories or three, or sometimes they're in no categories. They're kind of sit by themselves. So let's start on slide 75 with the blue chip stocks. Blue chip, where does that term come from? Well, these are the stocks that are the strongest of the strong, the financially strong, high quality stocks with long and stable records of earnings and dividends. And they are often referred to as value stocks. But be careful, we're going to come back to this value growth versus value debate. They tend to attract conservative investors, not politically conservative, but people who want to invest in stocks, but want to be protected on the downside. They don't want to speculate. They don't want to gamble. They want to invest. And examples of these are the companies you've heard of, ExxonMobil, Johnson & Johnson, you know, the big names that have been around for decades, and some of which are relatively new, but for the most part, these are very old economy, old companies, so to speak. And where does the term blue chip come from, by the way? Oh, it comes from the world of gambling, if you can believe that. It 100 years ago, 100, 200 years ago, only gentlemen owned stock. And gentlemen also gambled, because that's what a gentleman did. And at the roulette table and at the baccarat table, how do you say it, they used chips. And the blue chips were the most expensive chips, but I don't think that's true anymore. Now I think the black ones or the purple ones are. I don't know. I don't gamble. What did Confucius say? What, 2,500 years ago? The person who gambles picks their own pocket. Yes. So I don't gamble. Anyway, that's blue chips. Sometimes you'll hear a mutual fund, we invest in the bluest of the blue chip companies. They only invest in the highest quality companies. The next category consists of income stocks. And these are stocks with long and sustained records of paying higher than average dividends. So sometimes these are blue chips, but not always. They are often referred to as value stocks. Again, there's that term, value, that we'll come back to. They're normally slow growth companies in mature industries. And who's the poster child for the income stocks? Utilities. Right. Transportation, railroad companies, transportation companies, banks, companies that have been around for decades and they aren't going anywhere. It's not as though people are going to start all of a sudden taking cold showers in the dark. It's not going to happen, right? They're going to pay their electric bills, their gas bills, and the utilities are not going anywhere. But at the same time, they're not growing exponentially. And it used to be that banks were stodgy and boring and you could count on them to pay you dividends. And then things started to get a little financially innovative in the 1990s and then the 2000s, and banks became very exciting all of a sudden, which is not what a bank should be, and we all paid the price, right? Okay, slide number 76. Now, on the other side of this multifaceted coin are the growth stocks. The stars, the growth companies. These are the companies that you see on the cover of GQ and Vanity Unfair, and they've got the beautiful teeth and the great hair and the gorgeous pecs. These are stocks that experience high rates of growth in operations and earnings. Their growth rates are 15 to 20% or higher, and you say, well, 20% growth, I mean, that's not really that much. Oh, yes, it is. In 3.5 years, you'll be double your size if you're growing at 20%. And they're often associated with high PE ratios. Remember the price to earnings ratio. The higher the ratio, the more investors are willing to pay for a dollar's worth of earnings, the more volatile it should be, and we should expect it to be more of a growth company because we want the companies to get larger, and then maybe someday down the line they'll pay us much more dividends. Right now, they're not usually paying dividends. Very small token amount, maybe no dividends at all. Why? Because as we said, the profits are being reinvested in the company, retained earnings, to grow the company, so the stock price should go up. But usually these stocks are going to be the most volatile. Well, of the bona fide real companies, forget penny stocks for now. What are some examples? Intel, Microsoft, Hewlett Packard. Wait a minute. Are Intel, Microsoft, and HP still growth stocks? Well, I think Intel and Microsoft would say, yes, we're growing. HP might even say, yes, we're growing. But they're not growing like they were 20, 25 years ago. Everyone else is going out and buying a computer and finding out about this new thing called the internet. Right. Who are the growth stocks now? Right. The Farcebooks. I'm sorry. Fibbook. Facebook. The Titter. Bitter. It's Twitter. And then Netflix. And the disruptors. Amazon. Apple's growing. Microsoft is growing too. Actually pretty well. They're growing their cloud business, which is, you know, Amazon's growing their cloud business. Apple wants to grow their cloud business. So these companies, eventually, after they've grown to a point where they really can't grow any faster any longer, they then move into the other category, maybe an income, maybe a blue chip. You know, would you consider Microsoft a blue chip stock? Well, GE would say, hey, we've been around for over 130 years. Microsoft's only been around since the 1970s. And then what about Google? Oh, it's only, you know, Google and Facebook have only been around 10, 15, 20 years. So, well, they're bigger than some of the old blue chip stocks. Figure that one out. Slide number 77. So finally, we've danced around this topic again. And I said we'd get to it. And here we are. Growth versus value. You're going to hear these terms thrown around. And you have to be careful because sometimes they use them in a way that you may not think is what value really means. At least I don't. For example, let's see if we can get our hands around this, arms around this. The investment world loves to throw around the terms growth and value, but the meanings of the terms are not exact. Typically, investors use growth to designate a high PE stock, while they use value to designate a low PE stock. Remember, price divided by earnings. So if you look at so-called growth companies, you'll see fairly high PEs. And if you look at so-called value companies, you often will see low PEs. But that's not how I define the word value. To me, value means there's something there. There's something of value there. And this stock may be attractive. It may have a high PE. It may have a low PE. But there's value behind that company. And so don't get trapped in thinking just because the PE is low, the stock is not dangerous. Nothing could be further from the truth. It might be low because it deserves to be low. And here's an example on the bottom of slide 77. In January of 2005, Google was selling for around 200. With a sky-high PE, about 70 or something like that. They had just gone public in August of 2004 at about 85, 90, and then it doubled within, you know, 6 months to 200. The old GM, not the new GM, that's a whole different company, but the old GM was selling for $34 with a very low PE. I think it was about 6, the PE was about 6, and it was paying a very generous dividend. Well, what happened? Google sells for around $2,100, right? Maybe more, you know, stock split adjusted. And the old GM, which they renamed to Motors Liquidation, they first wanted to call it Liquidation Motors and GM Box, so they called it Motors Liquidation. It last sold in March of 2011 for 4 cents. So if you have that stock, it's not worth anymore because no one's buying it. Which one was the better value? Google with the high PE? Or the old GM with the very low PE. So don't get caught in that trap of thinking just because the PE is low, it's a great value. No. Or think just because the PE is high, it's not a great value. No, not necessarily. You have a whole lot more research to do. And you have to take that PE into consideration with a whole lot of other measurements that we'll make, and then throw all those measurements away. Wait till we get to chapter 6. Okay, slide 78, speculative stocks. These are stocks that are very dangerous, folks. Companies with a high degree of risk, they're typically losing money or have a very low earnings relative to their valuation. They offer the possibility of substantial capital gains and, more likely, substantial capital losses. So we're talking about biotech companies, new internet companies, alternative fuel companies. These are the hot companies that are right off the presses, and boy, you know, someday they're going to make a whole lot of money, so let's buy them now while they're sky-high valuations, because they're only going to get more expensive. Anybody want to buy Tesla now? Before you do, I'm not saying Tesla's a bad company. I'm rooting for them, folks. But before you do, take a look at the history of GoPro. And they're not the only ones, folks. There's so many of these darlings of the media, darlings of the investment world that just flew so high that they touched the sky and then crashed and burned. Right. So we call them speculative stocks. So let's once again come back to Mr. Benjamin Graham and read his timeless advice. An investment operation is one which, upon thorough analysis, promises safety of principal and a satisfactory return. Operations not meeting these requirements are speculative. So do you want to buy a speculative stock? All right, go ahead and buy it. But for every one speculative stock you buy, buy a bunch of other high quality blue chip, maybe growth, but you know, long-term growth. Okay? Because you're more likely to lose than you're going to win. That doesn't mean you're not going to win. Don't get me wrong. You might strike it rich, and that one company could take $1,000 into $50,000. But don't bank on it, all right? Okay, slide 79. Now, a couple other categories that you've maybe heard people talk about: cyclical stocks and defensive stocks. Oh, what are these? Well, cyclical stocks are stocks whose earnings and overall market performance are closely linked to the general state of the economy. They follow the business cycle. That's why they're called cyclic. They follow business cycles. The business cycle's doing well. People are getting new jobs and making more money. The economy's growing. These guys are going to do really, really well. And then when there's a recession, they're going to get hammered. And who are examples of this? Any company that makes stuff, materials, automobiles, timber, steel, chemicals, and now computer chips, because they're in everything that's built. So these are companies that are cyclical. And when the economy is doing well, they just tend to party and having a good old time. And when the economy is doing well, oh boy, do they have a huge hangover. Which leads us to defensive stocks, which is exactly the opposite of cyclical stocks. These are stocks that tend to hold their own, even do well when the economy starts to falter. Huh? Well, why is that? They tend to remain stable during declines in the market because they are companies that make food, and they are companies that make toilet paper and Tide and soap and toothpaste. They are companies that make things that people buy no matter what. Some of the drugs are in here too, but drugs are a little bit more speculative depending on what's going on. Drug companies that have been around a long time, they tend to be defensive because just because the economy is doing better, you don't take more insulin. The economy is doing worse, you don't take less insulin. You take your drugs. And so when the economy is exploding and everybody's getting new jobs and more money in their pocket, these guys are sitting in the corner going, ooh, we're defensive stocks. But then, right, when the organic matter hits the Ventolin device, these guys often go up. Why? Because traders, speculators, will move from the cyclical stocks into the defensive stocks. Does that make sense? And you should be able to identify them. Any company that makes things that everybody needs, no matter what, they're not going to buy more of them. Not like a car, you know. Economy's doing well. Go out and buy a new car. Why? Because I got it. I can. The old car. What's wrong with the old car? Nothing. I just want a new car. Does that happen when there's a recession? No. So those are the cyclicals, automobiles. Whereas the companies making toilet paper and soap and that kind of stuff, food, they're you know, you're still going to buy your toilet paper and your food, right? Slide number 80, the turnaround stock. Well, that's what Mr. Lynch called them. I call them goners because more often than not, they don't turn around. But these are companies that have fallen on hard times. And what you have to ask yourself is there potential to turn around? Well, Chrysler in the early 80s was on the ropes. In the early 1980s, they almost disappeared. And they had a new CEO. His name was Lee Iacocca. His name still is Lee Iacocca. Lee Iacocca. And he wrote a pretty good autobiography. He was the guy who at Ford was the project manager for the Ford Mustang, which was has been a very successful car since the 1960s. And so he then sought to bring Chrysler from the brink. And he did. So the stock went from about 40 down to 3, and then it went back up to 47 under his rule, under his guidance. So that's the potential, right? And that same thing happened to Ford, GM, in the 2008 debacle. Chrysler actually went private. They got bought by Fiat, and so now it's a conglomeration, Fiat and Chrysler, believe it or not. But GE and Ford, GE went through bankruptcy. Ford didn't. Ford did not go through bankruptcy, but their stocks just basically, VGs became worthless. You had to buy the new company, and Ford, it would hit the dollar, like $1.50 or something like that. And I kept saying, buy it, buy it, buy it. Ford's not going to, look, all three might go under. Those were dark times, folks. So you have to determine whether or not you believe the stock is going to rebound, or is it a goner and it's never coming back, like Kodak. Yeah. Now, what about asset plays? What is this? These are companies that are sitting on assets that could be sold or spun off. An example of this is JCPenney's. Several years ago, they were really not doing well. Now supposedly they're coming back. We'll see. They should be in the turnaround stock category. But they have an insurance division. They're the company that, I forget, it's called Touchstone or something like that. Something stone. And they try their best to sell you baby insurance, life insurance on your baby, which is totally worthless, folks. Unless the baby is an actor, it's worthless. Don't buy it. But they make a ton of money off of this. And so they can sell that business to keep JCPenney's retail business afloat, if need be. And it might come down to that because they've been hitting on hard times. I still like the place. You're talking to the wrong guy because I can't stand shopping. But it seems like a nice place to me. But the younger folks, they want everything online. So we'll see what happens to Penny's and Macy's. Most of the other department stores are gone, right? May Company, Robinson's, Montgomery Ward, the Broadway, the Mervyn's. Who is disappearing now is... Who is it? Well, I just had it touch my tongue. Sears and Kmart. Yeah, Sears and Kmart got together. It's like two people drowning. You throw a lifeline to each one of them and hang on. Okay. And what about, so you're going to do the worksheets. So I have a couple other examples I'll throw in. Don't make that on the surface don't seem to have a lot of assets, but it turns out they do. So you're going to do the worksheets. And then the penny stocks. We've made mention of these in the discussion forums and other places. Stay far away from these folks. Flim Flam Incorporated, Butterfly.com. These are just scams. Now, there's a few out there out of the 20-some thousand out there that are actually real companies trying to make a go of it and hit on hard times and they're trying to do it. But most of them are just somebody's garage out there in Oklahoma or Ohio or one of those places that start with the letter O or one of those places that start with the letter I, who knows where they are, but they're not real companies. And some people think, well, I can beat them at their own game. You know, I know what they're doing. They're pumping and dumping. They're you know, pumping up the price and then they're going to dump it. No, before you even start, the game is rigged against you. So you're going to go look at the examples in the worksheets and then hopefully you'll take a look at the Casas de Cambio where they actually... They hit you, the presentation about the Casas de Cambio. These people hit you with the spread. They'll sell to you for 7 cents, but then when you buy it back from them, they'll only give you 5 cents. Doesn't sound like a big difference, but that's over 20-some percent. Almost 30% they're going to take right off the bat. So stay away from the wrong side of the tracks, the red light district, the bad side of town. The penny stocks are scams. Stay away from them. And then again, on the website, and there's a few examples of companies that tried to get me, they sent, because they had my email address, send me these things, and go ahead, buy it, because it's going from 0.09 cents to 9 cents in 10 days, and you're going to get rich, wrong, and they're all worth zero now. So enough said, good. And then slide 81, foreign stocks, international stocks. Remember, international doesn't mean including the United States. It means outside the United States. It's a little subtle difference. You want to make sure you understand that. Now, direct investments are traditionally difficult to impossible to transact, but not anymore. Most brokerage firms have international accounts that allow you to buy shares on other exchanges. You have to change your dollars into that currency. And so there's currency issues there that we'll discuss in just a moment. But you can do it. You can go to the Korean exchange or the Mexican exchange or the European, one of the European exchanges, Frankfurt or London, and buy shares using your dollars, changing them into their currency. But to make it easier, many of the largest companies have what are called American Depository Receipts, ADRs. Sometimes you'll just see DR. And sometimes you'll see GDR, which stands for Global Depository Receipts. What do? Well, companies like Honda and Toyota and Sony, you can buy those shares using dollars on the United States exchanges, New York Stock Exchange usually. And how do they do that? Well, a trust company, a big major bank on Wall Street, went over to Japan and bought a ton of shares of Toyota and a ton of shares of Honda. And they went over to UK and bought a ton of shares of Unilever. And they brought them to the United States, and then they reissued them dollar denominated. So see, that's pretty easy then. So you're buying the company, but you're buying it through depository receipts. Most people, though, are going to want to get their international and global exposure by using global mutual funds, international mutual funds. And that's what personally I do, because it's just currency issues. What do you have to think about? They tend to wash out over the long term, but when you buy something outside the United States, whether it's real estate or a stock or whatever, and the dollar goes up, what happens? That real estate, that asset, that stock, whatever you bought, is now worth less. Right, because you have to sell it in the other currency and bring those dollars back by first selling the asset, and then you get that currency, and then you have to exchange the currency for dollars. And the opposite happens if the dollar gets weaker. The dollar gets weaker, whatever you own outside the United States automatically becomes worth more, all the things being equal, and they never are, so don't get flipped out. But they tend to wash out over the long term, as we said. Right now, the dollar is pretty darn strong. And in fact, it's fallen a little bit recently, but now would be a great time to buy a house in Mexico, right? Because 10 years ago, it was 12 years ago, it was about 10 pesos to the dollar. Now it's 18, 19. It's gone as high as 20 a couple years ago. So the dollar is fairly strong. And you have to ask yourself, will the dollar be stronger or weaker in the coming years? And it's hard to know. I have a tendency to think that the dollar's going to be stronger because we are not importing as much oil as we used to. We used to import 2/3 of our oil. And that meant all those dollars left the United States and had to go to other places. And that, you know, put a little pressure downward on the price of the dollar. But we're not doing that anymore. We're not importing tons and tons and tons of oil anymore. So the dollar has been stronger. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I assume, as it has over the long period of time, it'll all wash out. But we'll see. Slide 82. Finally, another term that we've been dancing around, capitalization. That's actually, we should just say, what's the size of the company? How big is the company? That's what capitalization means. You take the current price of the stock times the number of shares outstanding. It's a very simple calculation, and we don't even have to do it. We're going to do it a few times, maybe once or twice, but four times on the worksheet. But you just look it up. It's on the web. You look it up. And there are three main categories: the papa bears, the mama bears, and the baby bears. The large cap, standing for capitalization, mid cap, small cap stocks. And so these categories are being adjusted upward as we speak. I hear people saying that it has to be at least $15 billion to be a large cap company. I think that's a little much, but hey, I don't make the rules. And the rules are fungible, which means a fancy way of saying that they're squishy. It depends on who you're talking to. So you might say, well, I agree with the new people. It should say 15 billion and up. Okay, I'll take your word for it. Now, there's another category, a subcategory of large cap, and that is called the mega cap. Those are the companies that are worth over $100 billion. And there's really not that many of them, but there are a lot more than there used to be, thanks to the disruptive nature of the internet and the new tech companies. So you'll see some of those as we do our research. But it doesn't care. It doesn't matter. If it's in the hundreds of billions and you call large cap stock, I'll take yes, no problem. Or you call it a mega cap, it's up to you. Now the mid caps, again, you hear people talking about mid cap now starting at 4 or 5 billion, maybe even 6 billion, up to 15 billion. We'll stick for now. You can decide if you want to change it. If you want to change it, you can tell me. I don't agree with that. I agree with this. You go right ahead. So the 2 billion to 10 billion is what we will use for this class, but you can drive it upward if you want. Because now you hear people saying small cap stocks go up to about 4 billion, 5 billion. I don't know. Stock at $4 billion is small cap, but that's what you hear people saying now. So I'm not going to argue with them. And at about 100 million or lower, you get into a category called micro cap, where this company is very small relative to, you know, other companies in the universe. Okay, so that's a subcategory. Now, you don't have to, if it's smaller than 100 million, you could just say small cap and I'll take it, or say micro cap if you want to. But the one that we shouldn't even discuss in polite company are penny stocks. These are companies that sell for pennies, maybe 25 cents, maybe 0.2 cents. Stay away from them. Now, traditionally, they've said, the industry has said, anything less than $5 a share is a penny stock. Well, I don't know about that. Some companies, you know, they're hit on hard times and they get, as you said, Ford went down to $1.50. Chrysler went down to $3. So I don't know if I would agree with putting any company whose stock is less than $5 into the penny category. And some of these companies that have hit on hard times, what do? They will reverse split. They will, remember we said a stock, if it splits 2 for 1, the price will go in half. But if you do 1 for 2, the price will double because now you have fewer shares, right? So instead of increasing the number of shares, if you, using accounting, decrease the number of shares by going 1 for 5 or 1 for 10 or 1 for 2, the price will just jump. And so companies will do that so they can stay away from that $1-$2 range and be treated like a pariah as a penny stock. So who did that recently? I forget who. Somebody did that recently that you wouldn't think of, but they were in deep trouble. So they reverse split their stock. But stay away from penny stocks. We shouldn't mention them in polite company. So here's an example on slide 83. The price of that company is $20 that we talked about in the last presentation. We multiply that times 5 million shares and we get $100 million of capitalization. Now, when you do the calculation, you don't have to put all the zeros down there, folks. Just put 5 million and write the word million. And then when you do 20 times 5, you get 100, and then write the word million. You'll see when we do the count, we're going to do a worksheet, and there's a answer key and a commentary. So you'll do that worksheet, and you'll see how we calculate market capitalization, worksheet number 3. This is a small cap stock. You could say this is a micro cap. I'd be happy with that, either one. It's certainly not a large cap or a mid cap, so make sure you don't say that. The stock price, for the most part, is irrelevant. You know, until you get down to the penny stock range. You must look at the overall market capitalization to see what the value of the company is. Remember Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway? $300,000, one share. Well, you know, folks, if Coca-Cola had never split their stock, I don't know what it would be, but it would be in the tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars for one share. So that's why you must not just look at the price. You have to look at the market capitalization, because the price is not important, right? It doesn't matter what the price is. You buy as many shares as you can afford. If it's $100, you buy 5 shares. If it's $500, you buy 1 share, whatever. That's how much I can afford. But what's the market cap of the company? Okay? So let's take a look at some real-life examples. Here we go. Slide number 84. You've seen these two little mom-and-pop shops, right? Mom-and-pop stores, Walmart and Target, right? Target. Yeah, right. And you look at the price on 5th of February, and it looks like they're about the same. $116.81 for Walmart, $115.53. So are we saying that Target and Walmart are about the same size? Intuitively, you are thinking, no. Walmart's a whole lot bigger. And you're right. Walmart has 2.484 billion shares out there. And Target only has 506.7 million shares. So look at the market capitalization. Right. Walmart is 5 times larger than Target. Right. You must look at the market capitalization. Ignore the price. Look at the market capitalization. And does Walmart deserve to be 5-6 times bigger than Target? Well, Target is a very profitable company. Don't get me wrong. But they're only in the United States, whereas Walmart is aggressively moving around the world. Target tried to. They first tried to move into Canada. You would have thought they would have done well because they're based in Minneapolis, which is pretty close to Canada. And no, they kind of got, they left with their tail between their legs, did not do well in Canada. So they do well in the United States, though. Target's a very profitable company. And then let's take a look at these two little telecommunication firms you may have heard of, AT&T and Verizon. This is the new AT&T, not the old one. And you see that the price of AT&T on the 5th of February was $37.81. Price of Verizon, $59. So is Verizon really that much bigger than AT&T? Not really. There are 7.17 billion shares of AT&T, 4.14 billion shares of Verizon. So it turns out that AT&T is actually larger than Verizon. Not by that much, $30 billion, but still, it is the market capitalization that we must see. And what are these two companies? Yes, they're both mega cap companies, or large cap. If you use large cap, that's fine. By the way, Walmart was one of those mega cap companies. Target was a large cap company, has not broken into the mega cap world. Cool? Exciting? All right, dear students, we are so proud of you. And there's just one more presentation left, folks. One more presentation left, where we take a look at stock investing strategies. So stick with us. Don't give up. Never give up. We are so proud of you.